Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You're scared of things that go boom, boom, boom.
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
My name is Eric 13. I am here with Michael Kester, and you are listening to episode one of Patrick Klein.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't tell you about this. We're rebranding the show.
Okay.
It's double feature has run its course. It's over. The show is now called Patrick Klein.
Uh-huh. Fair enough.
Did you hear he did an article for... Okay. I'm sorry. I'll stop. We're doing some Wrong Turn movies today.
Yeah. We are doing Wrong Turn 2. There's a Killapalooza.
I heard there's some other movies, though.
There are. So today's Killapalooza.
I do remember there being Wrong Turn 2, but...
This is... So before we get into these movies, we're doing the Wrong Turn series, obviously. But before we get into this, I just want to take a minute. I just want to step back and look at where we are, what this has come to. So every year, Eric and I sit down and go, all right, Killapalooza, that's stupid, right? And every year there's a resounding, no, it's not stupid. And so every year we do fucking Wrong Turn 1 through 6. And you know what I think? I don't think anybody listens. I just think they think it's funny that we're sitting somewhere in
right.
the United States of America watching Wrong Turn 1 through 6.
Yeah. This is what? Killapalooza 25.
Right.
I only call this Killapalooza when you are in a FaceTime window on my computer.
Uh-huh.
When other people ask me, you're watching Wrong Turn 1 through 6, why are you doing that? I say, I have this show, we do these slasher marathons. I know, it doesn't
right.
make any sense anyways.
Yeah.
Let's talk about anything else.
Right. Although in my life, see, I said, I'm watching the Wrong Turn movies and they say, why are you doing that? I'm like, well, I have this show and we have this thing called Killapalooza, and they go, oh, I get it. I mean, that's... It speaks for itself.
Right.
The term Killapalooza speaks for itself on every level.
So we're going to spoil them.
Yep.
There's things that happen in these movies. Who gets shot with an arrow? Which body parts get ripped off?
Which 1980s punk rock superstar shows up and starts wiping out mutants?
All of those things will be, may or may not be spoiled. Mm-hmm. I don't want to make any promises. Who knows what's going to happen in
right.
the show? Certainly not the guy with the notes. No, no idea what's going to happen here. So use the chapters and skip over the Wrong Turns you haven't seen. You wouldn't want to spoil them. I can't even... You don't give a fuck. You don't give a single fuck. Yeah, whatever. You don't even need the chapters. Psh, put your fucking iPhone back in your pocket and keep jogging or whatever you're doing. It's all going to be fine. I actually wanted to thank, before we go in this, old friend of mine, Jill Moriarty.
Uh-huh.
Gave to our Kickstarter this year. She wanted to... Okay, listen. She wrote this thing on the Kickstarter.com. You know, when people give to the show, I ask them what their name is and how to pronounce their name, because, of course, I'm terrible at that. Usually it doesn't work, but I happen to know Jill. And then they get to plug something. Because
mm-hmm.
I feel like I don't just want to be like, thanks, Jill, and move on. That's weird. So there's just a nice little gap in here, and I don't know, I just want to talk about something they're doing, get to
mm-hmm.
know people.
Sure.
This is what Jill elected to plug. The title of this plug is Eric 13 is a Kitty, K-I-T-T-Y. The details of this plug is Eric 13 is now and has always been an adorable baby cat. In conclusion, Eric is a kitty. And then it's K-I-T-T-E-H with an exclamation point. That is what she chose to, of all the things, Jill's an artist.
Uh-huh.
She could be talking about fucking photography, something she's doing with her life, make a funny joke.
She did make a funny joke.
I guess she went for the third option.
She did,
which
yeah.
is fine.
Well, she called you out. That's one thing that's great about the show is that nobody sees in this FaceTime window that I'm actually speaking to an adorable little kitty.
I appreciate you maintaining my cover, but we all know that I am Doge. And that's... Well, now that that awkwardness has ensued, why don't we talk about... Hey, speaking of awkward, why don't we talk about Wrong Turn?
Wrong Turn is it's a really good place to start this Killapalooza for a lot of reasons, other than the fact that it's the first film in the franchise. When we talk about Killapaloozas, What's really kind of the through line is you have to take the first movie as the gospel of the rest of the series. It fills in a lot of gaps. It's always what you can return to go, okay, here are the rules. Here's the canon. And what's really interesting about Killapalooza for me is the first movie is always the one that you see. It sets the tone of the era. So we did year one Killapaloozas were the 80s slasher classics, Friday the 13th, Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street, etc. They're all set in the 80s. Teens are all actually 35-year-old men, that kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
In 2003 or 2002, whenever Wrong Turn came out, the horror climate is totally different. Saw has dropped. We all know Saw at this point.
I think we're going to get into that plenty.
Survival horror is what's going on. It's no longer the slasher is dead. The basic horror outline is survival horror. And it's the kind of survival horror that High Tension basically outlined when it came out. You have a character set and a mysterious force that probably drives around in a rickety truck. Let's be honest. I've seen Rest Stop Jeepers Creepers and High Tension. Your villain drives around in a
Joyride
rickety truck. Perfect.
What the fuck was the other one of those? Monster Man.
Yeah, rickety truck. Always
okay.
Run afoul of a rickety truck, and the rickety truck kills off you and all your friends. But here's the interesting thing about Wrong Turn, the film. Your set of friends that get slaughtered, the whole time you're scrambling to find your final girl because you're thinking this is a slasher movie.
Uh-huh.
Wrong Turn doesn't realize it's a slasher movie and instead opens with Quinn from Dexter and ends with that girl from Dollhouse.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Eliza Dishku?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
I think name. I actually sort of got that. Yeah, well, what's also funny is there's no guessing the final girl because the fucking cover is the final girl. Also, I'm pretty sure they hold hands and drive into the sunset at the end.
Right.
That may just be my sort of mental retconning of how the series, I'm just replacing the endings with what I think would be funniest.
Mm-hmm.
But I am fairly certain that's where it ends. And so, yeah, I mean, I thought about that as we were going through it as well. We have five fucking characters or something.
At least.
And I'm going, yeah, but I know who's on the cover.
Right.
I've seen the cover of the movie. I know what happens here. And clearly the weird looking mutant guy is the one who gets away.
Right. Jeremy Sisto. He's going to make it this time.
No. That's so mean. So mean. I'm really happy to see Jeremy Sisto in this. Do you remember those peak Jeremy Sisto years?
Yeah, those were a good 3 years.
For some weird reason, for 3 years, he's just in all independent horror films.
Yeah, it's bizarre. Also, his character in this is insane. Like, I don't know how the fuck. He clearly goes into the audition going, yeah, so I hear you have a stoner in this movie. And they go, yeah, we cast him. How about you're the uptight boyfriend? And he goes, I have no idea. Come to the set dressed as an uptight boyfriend. He shows up in his tunic because that's the closest thing Jeremy Sisto owns to uptight boyfriend attire.
I just love watching him. We've seen him in a couple things. I mean, May. If you really want to talk peak Jeremy Sisto, I think May was definitely it. But I want to say it was in Jeremy Kasten's The Thirst.
It's totally right? possible.
Wasn't he a vampire Thirst? I don't know. I'm thinking back to that time. So it's a really weird cast. And also, this is the thing that totally set me on the right path for a Wrong Turn.
Oof.
God damn it.
You can't say that yet. This is the only movie that doesn't flat out say, don't take a wrong turn.
Yeah, I can feel the review writing itself, really. No, I mean, it's one cheesy theme away from pure lazy Sunday movie.
Totally.
You know what I
mean? Totally.
It even opens with a made-for-TV style.
Yep.
There's a montage of weird, a theme song.
Yeah.
They're missing the theme song because they didn't pay to have one made.
Right.
But someone should go back and record. Actually, you could probably just take one of the 20 other Wrong Turn theme songs.
Or the Eerie Indiana theme.
Yeah, right. And put it right in the beginning of this movie. And you have a perfect lazy Sunday movie.
Right. Well, the thing about Wrong Turn is that it's clearly a canned studio just shit on the wall movie. They go, oh no, these are doing really well. Make another one. And they, you know, this is the bucket of blood to the Little Shop of Horrors. They go, this is right. In vogue. Make a new one. Make some more money out of it. Squeeze it. Kill it till it's dead.
It's the producer going, well, can we call it The Hills Have Eyes? No, that's taken. The wrong Hills Have Eyes? No, you can't use Hills Have Eyes. Took a wrong turn and wound up at the hills that have... No, we can't. Well, what about just Wrong Turn? Okay, that'll be fine.
Sure.
Right. That's how we got Wrong Turn. That's the story of how Wrong Turn came to be. It does openly acknowledge that all of these movies owe something to Deliverance. Right. And I thought that was...
Totally.
I was like, thank you, Wrong Turn. What no one else had the balls to say
is
all your mutant cannibal movies are really just Deliverance, but a little more mutiny and cannibally.
Right.
A little more 30 years in the future.
Sure.
When you just... There's no subtle kind of metaphor going there. You just go, no, they are mutant cannibals.
Well, and I think what's really crazy about Wrong Turn is that Wrong Turn comes out in a place and it's, for all intents and purposes, not the most remarkable horror movie that's come out in the early 2000s. But I feel like, and maybe I'm totally wrong about this, but I feel like Victor Crowley and Hatchet owes itself to Wrong Turn. Because I feel like if you think about it, and it's... very unlikely that Adam Green hasn't seen Wrong Turn because he happens to be friends with Joe Lynch, who we'll talk about for a long time in a little bit. But you have these deformed mutants out in the woods using basic tools to slaughter teenagers. I feel like Hatchet is the kind of thing where Adam Green saw Wrong Turn. And similarly to what I think you and I see in Wrong Turn, maybe not just the film, but the whole franchise, is he went, there is so much potential here and nobody's reining it in.
I did want to, maybe we could use this for a transition because they pointed out a little more in the second one. The toothless guy.
Oh, yeah.
Laying around at the gas station.
Why don't we get more of that guy throughout the series?
We may get more of him, which I'll forget to bring up again later. But I love that he's just drinking Pepto-Bismol. That's just a thing that I don't know if anyone else caught that. But yeah, he's just got a drink of Pepto-Bismol in his hand.
I love Gateway
so
Death Curse.
We get to Wrong Turn 2, which for me is the first in the franchise because you've been talking about this movie forever. And I wanted to just purge everything I knew about Wrong Turn, which up to this point was just one movie. And actually, because Eliza was in, I'm never going to be able to say her name right, in the first movie, I don't know, for people who haven't seen Dollhouse, it's about, let's say, an escort service, sort of. It's about, like, robot girls who can pretend to be other things. It's a fantasy service. And so once you've seen Dollhouse and you see those actors in other things, they're not just actors, but they could be robots from Dollhouse acting out other fantasies.
Treetop robots that don't get shot by arrows. Right. Gotcha.
So I'm watching the whole thing thinking this is just a scrapped, you know, one of those early Whedon Dollhouse episodes before he really established mythology. So I put Wrong Turn into unfairly the Dollhouse franchise.
Sure.
And now we're at Wrong Turn 2 and everything has started.
Okay.
So I feel like because we're on the right proper show for this now, I want to talk about the problem we had lining this up, which I know we've addressed in other places, but because I really backed you into a corner here.
Right.
And I feel like I should at least acknowledge that a little bit.
I
don't know if
that.
You want to
I
talk about
that.
This or
well,
if I
basically,
should.
Okay. So I have, until for today's show, I did watch more Wrong Turn films than I had seen previously, but I saw Wrong Turn 2 right about the time it came out. And definitively up and down swore that it was one of the greatest horror movies ever made and that Wrong Turn was kind of just a nice place to have another horror movie, but that Wrong Turn 2 was really the only one that mattered. And then Wrong Turn 3 came out and I watched that and immediately and definitively was like, no, Wrong Turn 2 is the only one that will ever matter. And so for a long time on the show, I tried to get Wrong Turn 2 on without covering Wrong Turn. Just because I felt like we didn't have enough to say about something like Wrong Turn. And so I tried to be creative and do maybe sequels with sequels, you know, movies that we didn't necessarily need to watch the first one. I even, I believe, once tried to do a double feature of Wrong Turn 2 and Hamlet 2, which you did. Hamlet 2
which
is actually
about as close
not,
as you got.
It's not even Hamlet 2 is not even a sequel. It's just a film about the sequel to Hamlet.
I think honestly what happened there, being totally honest, is we just had better ideas that year.
Sure.
I think had you pitched that for a few more years, it would have happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is probably the wrong time and place to tell you. You could have avoided seeing six Wrong Turn movies.
Had I just stuck with the Coogan as Jesus movie?
Well, listen, Double Feature uses the basic accounting principles of sequel-ology, which is to say that for some stupid reason, I can't see the second one without seeing the first.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been very few exceptions to that in my life, and most of them are because I fell backwards or was sort of forced into that.
Sure. Or you didn't realize it was the second one. Because right, you saw the Devil's Rejects before you realized that it was a sequel to House of a Thousand Corpses.
Well, and I remember saying on that show, fuck everybody who told me I should do that.
Right.
Go see the first one first.
Right.
And, you know, we did Steal This Film too, without doing Steal This Film.
Sure.
Just because Steal This Film is a separate documentary and one isn't really a sequel and I don't know why the fuck we did either of them, but so there's been a couple times where that's really, I think those are the only times. I mean, it was just hard finding a spot for it. And then once we got to six fucking Wrong Turn movies, it kind of became, oh, well, now we have some strange obligation to it. The time has elapsed where we could have wedged it in. Kind of like the opposite happened with Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
Psycho has a bunch of sequels, but we addressed the first Psycho before we knew about that, and now we just can't do it as a killpalooza. It's
sure.
I don't know.
We will.
The arbitrary rules we've created, we need to adhere to. It's very important.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're here now. Wrong Turn 2.
So what's important to me before we really dive into the movie is first, I want to give a little background of what Wrong Turn 2 is as far as the makeup of what we call old school American horror and why it's an interesting fit. So the film's directed by Joe Lynch, which is one of the double feature champions of old school American horror. He was one of the Chillerama directors, along with Adam Rifkin and Adam Green. And
he did a zombie movie, I think was his segment on that.
Tim Sullivan.
Tim Sullivan did I Was a Teenage Werebear.
Right.
Was
his... Also 2001 Maniacs.
Yes. Lynch did Everly. Pretty recently, right, actually, right? Which I haven't seen yet.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it looks like it's pretty good.
He also did the original cut of Knights of Badassdom, which was stolen by the studio and recut.
Oh, interesting.
But it's still a great, it's a great movie, but I mean, he hashtagged NMC all over Twitter about it, so.
Well, how do I not know this hashtag?
Not my cut.
Oh, interesting.
Also,
half of Holliston, right?
Yep, I mean, half of Holliston.
In with that whole Adam Green camp. And,
right.
And I feel like we would talk about just as much as Adam Green if he had more films earlier on.
And that's what's interesting is he did Wrong Turn 2 and then Knights of Badassdom got tied up in production so much that it came out last year, Everly this year. And the only other thing he really did in between other than Holliston was the Richard Reilly drive-in portion of Chillerama.
Which, I mean, is wonderful.
Right.
It's so good. So, you know, and that's partially our fault too. My fault. It's partially my fault for waiting so long for Wrong Turn 2.
Right.
Is we could have been, you know, it's not that we've really covered Adam Green so much. He's just the poster child for old school American horror.
Right.
Mostly because he invented it.
Sure. And what's really interesting is I would stick Wrong Turn 2 in old school American horror, despite the fact that it blatantly violates the second law of old school American horror.
Right.
Not a remake, not a sequel, not a Japanese one. And
yeah,
Wrong Turn 2 is unfortunately
so
a sequel. Right. So does Hatchet 2 and 3.
Yeah. So I think the first thing that sticks out to me about this movie is that it's a lot more ambitious than it needs to be. And I think that's actually going to be one of the few things that continues in the series that I'm impressed by. But this movie gets really concept heavy.
Sure.
When it could have just stuck some more teens in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
It makes this whole reality TV concept so early in the series. I mean, by the time it's Wrong Turn 3 or 4, I expect it to get a little more concept-y.
To go to space or, you know.
Yeah, what the fuck are we doing?
It took Halloween 8 movies to do a reality show.
Yeah, we shouldn't, until Wrong Turn 8, we don't need to really be seeing this.
Right.
He just comes out with it right away, and he builds the whole thing around these different jokes and having a fucking American Idol or reality TV sure. star in the opening segment.
Get split in half, right?
Yeah, well, that gets to the other thing, too, which is that the effects are maybe the best in this one. No, I would say definitely the best in this one
mm-hmm.
of all six. I think as they get cheaper, I don't know if they get cheaper or not. As they go on, for whatever reason, they become more and more CG.
Mm-hmm.
And CG often, you know, it falls prey to what skeptics will refer to as the toupee fallacy, the criticism of CG,
mm-hmm.
which is that you think all toupees look fake, and you think that because if a toupee looks real, you don't call it out as a toupee.
Sure.
Right?
Right.
People like to bitch a lot about how CG ruins horror movies, and they don't realize that 90% of effects in all horror films, no matter what, are CG.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, there's a lot of fucking toupees in this sure, franchise.
Totally,
you know what I mean?
Totally.
And Wrong Turn 2, you know, splitting a girl in half is even partially digital, right? Maybe not. I'm trying to think back to how the shots
done. I think it's
all
practical because it's just at her feet. And then they fall apart and they drag the two halves of the body.
You're right. You're right. Yeah. It's really seeing the two halves drag away.
Right.
And the fact that splitting at the feet, you see them kind of fall
the wrong
to the
way.
Left
right,
and the right.
The wrong way.
Yeah. It just feels like, oh man, it's not like one of those shots that we see over and over in this franchise and in other places where a wire splits a person.
Sure.
And then they melt away. Mm-hmm. This is just, you know, I'm imagining the reaction, sort of reaction charted out on a graph, the sort of curves,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Where if a person is slowly sliding away, you have that creep. The slope is a creep.
Right.
You're going, oh, this is bad. And oh, now they're apart.
Mm-hmm.
But if a person just immediately flops in the direction they're not supposed to go, it's a lot more, it's like the decapitation thing.
Sure.
There's no up, maybe part of them will stick together and they're still, nope, they're dead.
Right.
It's just like, oh, that's not how you're, wow, that's really two pieces there. The effect happens before the audience
right.
can even really
right.
soak in how terrible it is.
Right.
And then they're just dragging her away, dragging her floppy corpse away. It's awesome. It's great.
One of the things that I love about this movie as far as the ambition goes, so you mentioned the reality show aspect, and I think that Henry Rollins as a host of that is amazing.
How is this possible?
But also
how did this happen?
The ex-Marine character just being like the ultimate action Ahab is amazing. But what I love about it conceptually, and it's something that the rest of the franchise misses the mark on really heavily, even though I think they're trying, is that this movie is a really interesting, and this is getting way headier than this movie even wants me to get.
Oh, do it.
Interesting look at antagonists versus protagonists, because you have a bunch of basically unlikable people go to a place they don't belong and bother the fuck out of a family that's not doing anything to anyone.
Sure.
I mean, they are
it's
doing
Texas
things.
Chainsaw again.
Right.
Right.
They it's are doing
a home invasion movie in reverse.
The only difference is that the people they're bothering happen to eat people. And
yeah.
So basically they see food show up. And this movie, even more than the first Wrong Turn, wipes out the final girl so much better. Because I'm assuming if I'm to believe the film did its part with you, you believed that the producer's girlfriend was the final girl, right?
Oh, you have to.
Right?
You have to, because she's the unlikely.
Sure.
You certainly don't think she's going to go first.
Right.
Because they tell you she's going to go first.
Right. Well, and
oh, teehee, I would be so bad at this. And then she dies
exactly.
immediately. You go, wait, I thought we were setting up a thing here.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Right.
Yeah, I have no idea. The people who make it out in this movie, I chose everything wrong.
Right.
I chose the first person wrong. I chose the last person wrong. I chose that Henry Rollins wouldn't be creating dynamite death arrows.
Right.
I was just a bad bingo spot. I don't know why I did that.
I think what's really cool about that is the people that do survive are, and again, this movie may or may not even do this intentionally, but they're the only characters that show any growth. They're the two characters that don't like each other. from the very beginning, they go, yeah, you're my partner. Yeah, I'm your partner. Let's not do this. I don't need friends. And they end up having to rely on each other. It's kind of like the buddy system when everybody gets paired up with their friend and then you and some kid that's not your friend and you don't want to be with are together.
Sure.
Well, all the friends aren't. It's kind of the idea that two people, you know the phrase, you complete me? The Notebook phrase?
Yes. Sure. Is that from The Notebook?
I don't know. It's probably in The Notebook. I haven't seen The Notebook.
We have to go back to year zero when we covered The Notebook. Right. I want to create an imaginary year where we covered all these films and then Blade Runner, see year zero.
But it's the idea that two people that are comfortable with each other are maybe at 100%, right? So 50% and 50% make 100% and they're thus completed. But two people that are independent are each 100% and together make 200% and are probably more versatile in situations. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think that's what this is that you have these two characters that don't necessarily like each other, but they're human beings. And all the characters that die have facets of being ridiculously selfish humans.
Yeah.
Whereas the survivors, up until Rollins, are looking out for everyone, more or less. With the exception of the girlfriend that gets the axe to the head. She just gets a bad break.
I didn't think about that, but it is interesting to think about character development in a movie that's playing with archetypes.
Right.
I mean, it has a, you know, it's almost doing a Cabin in the Woods style.
Right, totally.
This is the jock. This is the, I mean, that's the reality show. And when you see it now, so many, everybody knew from basically the inception of reality TV that it's lowbrow entertainment and it's ripe for criticism. And I actually really applaud the things in reality TV that managed to get their head above water as far as that goes, because it's turned into something where today with reality TV, you don't immediately see a reality TV show and go, this is terrible.
Right.
Like things on the Cooking Channel, right? Or these shows where people just, I don't know, refurbish houses and then resell them and lose money or whatever the fuck people do on TV.
Right.
The other day, I was, getting my oil changed or something, and a TV was on, and Larry the Cable Guy was giving tours of somewhere in a reality show.
Uh-huh.
And I went, good for him, Larry the Cable Guy, finally doing some some good work. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. We've strayed, we've evolved, I think, beyond the point where all reality TV is trash.
Right.
But also, we've had a decade to criticize reality TV at this point. When this movie came out, I think that was a huge reason people embraced it, is because it was critical of something that was fucking terrible. So, you know, the satire element was a lot higher.
Right. Well, and I think that, and we'll see when we get Everly on the show and Knights of Bed-Astem, I think that Joe Lynch plays in an area of horror that maybe Adam Green, I think, is a gore hound, and Adam Green is really good at the heightened physical fear.
Right.
Joe Lynch, I think, comes from a place of crazy action basis, which is why I think that the Marine killer in this movie is such a strong resonant point. Every time Rollins is on the screen, your fists are clenched and your teeth are gritted. Yeah. And you're going, fucking kill those mutants. Yeah, awesome.
Mutants, which, by the way, probably also look their best here. I mean, just as a piece of effects work, you know, he knows when to show them and when to hide them. The idea of hiding the mutants just lost on the rest of the franchise. They're like, no. We bought that mask at the Halloween store. You put it right on that mutant. Slap a little bit of, I don't know, what do you got in that box over there? Some hair? Just
mutant goo?
Tack that on the side. Yes. I mean, they're not even gooey enough.
Yeah.
If you just smear some blood over their face or something, some dirt, I don't know.
Right.
I think the mutants look best in this one.
And I think that we get that really nice tie-in with the old man from the first movie. Kind of place him in the universe.
Pepto-Man.
That's exciting.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
And then I also really like that the movie ends on that fucking gross, deformed baby creature that sucks on the thumb. I feel like Wrong Turn 2 is the movie everybody deserved from the era of the survival horror movie. And I'm not knocking some of these other movies, because I will definitely come on here and say that I think Jeepers Creepers is a great flick. And I think that, you know, there's something to be said for Rest Stop, and there's something to be said. I mean, we've talked High Tension.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that Wrong Turn, I think, is the one thing that all of those other movies are missing that Wrong Turn nails is resonating all the way to 2015.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Wrong Turn 2 is just as enjoyable now as it was when it came out.
Yeah.
You don't need to put yourself back in a place of 2003 horror.
Yeah, right. Well, and that's what I meant about the reality TV, is it certainly has changed over
sure,
time.
Sure, totally.
But luckily, I think it got over, you know, it might have gone in a different direction. It could have been a lot more unlucky in how it aged as reality TV sort of, I don't know, evened out or whatever happened there. People's reactions to it stopped being as awful.
Right.
But because it's still enjoyable now, I think that's that really immediate period of, is this going to date itself or will it still be relevant somehow, passed, and thankfully it's still
sure,
good.
Right.
So the third Wrong Turn opens with this tradition of the overhead, you know, forest shot.
Mm-hmm.
This is another thing, if I could retroactively give more credit to the second Wrong Turn. When you're doing the second movie, in a lot of ways, you're defining what will be the staples.
Sure, totally.
Because it's all the stuff you bring back. And then the third movie
is
bound basically
by what
choosing
you did.
A subset of
right,
that.
Right.
Now, it can choose to go back to the first one. I mean, Friday the 13th is such a great example.
Sure.
Where we miss out on the hockey mask and, you know, we're building staples as we go. So it doesn't always happen that way. But certainly when you look at this franchise, most of the staples are things that were chosen by the second film as continuing to be icons mm-hmm. from the first movie. And so, yeah, we start with that overhead tracking shot. And then, the other thing we do is another tradition set by the second one, which is starting on a kill and then moving
right.
into the story.
Totally.
Which is pretty much all of the movies. They all start with some kind of vignette and then boom, Wrong Turn, and we
right.
we move into the thing. And so we're starting to get genetic makeup for the series. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if I'm remembering back through my six films correctly, the vignette we open with here is the arrow through the tit, right?
Yeah.
And then the eyeball?
Yeah.
Yeah. you know, effects work. This is what I'm talking
sure.
about with the effects
sure.
work. I do think it's kind of cool, arrow through the
sure.
tit.
Sure, I think I that's know. Probably the high point of the film.
Well, these movies, you know, in all of the choices that the films make, one thing they decide to fully embrace, maybe even to a fault, is nudity.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of slasher franchises don't.
Right.
You know,
right.
slasher franchises get a reputation for this.
Right.
But if we were to, we got to tap into some of our listeners who love to make charts. There's a few of them, believe it or not. I would like some data going back through our Killapaloozas. We should email about this
sure.
a little bit. If anybody wants to take this project on, doublefeatureshow@icloud.com. I'm curious to know, of the franchises we've covered, and our information skews towards irrelevancy because we don't just cover the five big ones,
mm-hmm.
but of all of the franchise horror films, how many of them actually incorporate nudity for a majority of the franchise?
Sure.
Seems a lot smaller than, you know, the iconic originals.
Right.
You know
totally.
What I mean? Wrong Turn, however, goes, nudity is one of the things we're definitely
totally.
Going to do. We're going to do cannibals. We're pretty set on that.
Yep.
Non-negotiable.
Right.
And nudity.
One thing that Wrong Turn 3, and this is, for me, I'm just going to come out and say it. This is probably the low point in the franchise for me.
Of the whole franchise?
Of the whole franchise. This is...
Ooh, you're incorrect about that.
No way.
Of the entire franchise, Wrong Turn 3 is the low
yeah,
point?
Yeah, and I'll explain why when we get to the later movies. But
so you didn't sleep through any of these
no,
movies?
No, here's why. Here's
you
why.
You took like a short nap, though.
Here's
like
why.
Like a short one.
Wrong Turn 3 comes...
Like 15 minutes.
After Wrong Turn 2. Wrong Turn 3 has every opportunity to just rehash Wrong Turn 2.
Another reality show?
And do anything.
How funny would that have been? If every subsequent Wrong Turn movie is just
up
another.
On, sure.
Yeah. Not even Mutant Cannibals. It's just a new type of reality show every time.
Well, the rest of the franchise at least embraces some sort of background story in canon. This movie's stuck in the middle of fucking Weirdsville with a Mexican prisoner and an FBI agent and some fucking skinheads. Here's the thing. This is the par that this film sets. This movie is under the impression that when people move prisoners, we pick one of each crime and put them all in a bus.
Yeah, right.
Because right. The way that crimes work and the way that jail works is that you can have one of each criminal in a jail. So there's an arsonist, there's a thief, there's a white collar criminal, there's a skinhead, there's a murderer. That's how low of a caliber, that's how disrespectful this movie is of its audience.
Well, this is a prison in America. So if this were realistic, 100% of them would be in there for drug crimes.
That's the point.
Nonviolent drug offenses.
That's what I mean, is that this movie is so out of its element that it thinks that criminals are selected one at a time and stuffed on a bus. And it's just the whole premise of this movie is so bananas to me, down to money bags and rafts and the whole idea that there's probably just one cannibal in the entire movie and you only see him like four times.
I was so sure we were going to get back to Teens in the Woods again.
Why not?
The fact that we create this weird prison story, mm-hmm. We start the movie, it takes us a long time to even get in the woods.
Right.
We're just doing this whole weird, the old Spanish prisoner transfer routine. You know, I don't know. It's just such a weird fucking thing to do. I guess it matches up with a lot of our, what I still theorize. Let me know how you feel about this. It's been a while since we talked about this. I think it was on Hellraiser that we started talking about how we would see a slasher franchise and then there would be some kind of one-offs that would just appear and have seemingly fucking nothing to do with the franchise. Right. And Pinhead would show up for 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And you would go, sort of seems like you wrote a movie and just put Pinhead in it.
Yeah.
And I get the feeling, and we continue to see this over and over. We would see it with, what was it, Wishmaster that I think had a couple of those.
Definitely Wishmaster.
Or
very definitely Amityville.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. I wrote this movie about this lamp. Can you do anything with this?
There's three Amityville movies.
Did you buy it at a haunted house? Right. Right. So, One Yard Sale could have generated so much, so many different Amityville sequels, all that lost potential. That was actually, to go back to the first Wrong Turn for a moment, I think that was a Jeremy Sisto line, was just a fucking incredible line for the art department of any film, like a garage sale from hell.
Yeah.
I just want everyone to remember that when you're dressing a set. That's the bet. You should just tell that to all people always. What should this look like? Garage sale from hell. Done. We all know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
This looks like a passion project to me. It looks like somebody who really wanted to get their prison transfer film made.
Sure.
And they finally found, because it's impossible to raise money for anything. Mm-hmm. And they finally found a way. And it's through this one technicality of Hollywood, which is to sell your fucking soul and just put
mutant cannibals in. Put mutant cannibals in it. Yeah.
Wishmaster 5 or what was that? No. We were just talking about the cast and stuff.
Oh, Witchcraft
Expeditions. Witchcraft 5. That's what it was. That was probably the earliest tell on our show of this happening. Right.
Well, and what's really interesting about this though is that I agree. I feel like this was a pet project that somebody got their hands on and turned into mutants. However, whoever this guy is fell deeply in love with mutants. Deeply and passionately in a torrid romance with forest mutants.
What makes you think that?
Probably because it's the same guy who made Wrong Turn 4 and 5.
Now, this strikes me more of that thing where Australia buys The Howling.
Uh-huh.
And then,
sure.
You know what I mean? I don't know. There's some production stuff going on. You don't want to talk about the trauma blanket at all from Wrong Turn 3? We're going to get through that whole thing and you don't want to... Okay, that's fine. Wrong Turn 4 actually kind of gets us right back to a prison-y thing. It's not really.
It's
an asylum where people appear to be kind of held
against their will. And it's apparently a prequel. It's supposedly an origin story However, they seem to think that it's fine enough to go, this is an origin story. We don't have an origin, but this is the earliest records we have of them eating people.
Yeah, well, so here's what happened with my viewing of this. Let me walk you through a little journey I took.
Uh-huh.
So similar to Puppet Master, where I got interested in how the hell are there so many of these movies and why are people so passionate about them? And this is all, I blame Twitter for this. I'll send out a little tweet, put a picture up of a Wrong Turn film, or be like, what am I doing today? I'm watching all these Wrong Turn movies. And just some weird person will come out of the woodwork and describe how passionate they are about this one weird piece of canon from the fifth fucking movie. And then I'll be like, this guy can't be the only one watching these, right? There's like a couple people who've seen these. And then I'll find some kind of Wrong Turn forum where people are debating which
of the
films
three,
One Eye
which
is
of the
in
three,
and
yeah,
where,
right. Totally. Whether
which,
or not,
where the
whether
mutant
or not
lost
Three
his
Finger
toes
was
and,
in one of the other movies.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Do they all drink Pepto-Bismol?
Sure.
I mean, like, that wasn't on that forum, but I should go back and post that because that's a good question for these particular movies. But these guys are, I don't know, people get really, really into the canon of these things.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to discover how people have pieced together the timeline.
Uh-huh. And it goes, if I can guess.
And please.
4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 6.
I don't remember, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, 6 might not have been in this particular
sure.
thread.
Yeah, probably not, because that
they
makes
were talking
no sense.
About how the later films were all prequels.
Right.
And there was debate over whether or not 4 and 5 took place in the gap in the third movie.
Okay.
The gap in the...
Between 1 and 2?
Fourth movie.
Okay.
Fuck. No, this is already fucked up. No, in the fourth movie, we have the asylum stuff, and then we fast forward in time some amount.
Uh-huh.
And so there was debate over whether the 5th and 6th, so I guess it did include the 6th,
take place,
were sandwiched in there or
gotcha
came afterwards.
I
don't give
I
a fuck.
I can definitely see. Here's something to play into that. What's the other one's name? Shark Tooth?
I don't
Teeth?
Know. I don't remember what
Teeth
they,
Man.
Yeah, okay.
The Dentist.
Right.
The one that's not Three Finger or One Eye, the other one with an arbitrary facial feature that you can't distinguish from the other two,
right.
Looks awfully similar to the father in Wrong Turn 2. I'm willing to bet that's blatant coincidence, but I can also mm-hmm. see some crazy person who thinks that not only Wrong Turn 4 has any basis for canonical continuation, but also apparently believes that all lesbians ever do is fuck.
Oh, man. This is where the sex really...
This is...
I mean, it's just group sex left and right. It's ridiculous.
This movie is insanely offensive when it comes to the progressive nature of humanity. Because here's what I see. I see this movie going, black people and Asian people are people too. They can be lesbians and they fuck all the time because right. they're gay and right. black and Asian.
Right.
And I'm going, okay, listen. By pointing it out, by saying lesbians fuck all the time too, you're being ignorant.
Yeah, it's difficult for me because I like to think of a... Man, it feels uncomfortable even talking about it in this context. But I like to imagine a fun environment where everybody's polygamous and we can all just have sex as recreation, and isn't that a delightful place?
Mm-hmm.
And then I see it portrayed in this movie and I go... Wow, I'm a horrible human
right.
being. Is this what my fantasy actually
looks
like? I don't
want to go there. Right.
Yeah. And so I imagine, you know, actually being that guy, he's in a room with other people on the next bed and everybody's just having sex and they totally don't give a fuck and it's all fine. And somebody walks in, they make a joke. These all seem like good ideas on paper.
Right.
But then when I see them happen, I go, something about this just seems terribly unrealistic and sleazy and mm-hmm. just bad.
Right.
just not, what's the word? Good.
Right. And I think that this movie isn't devoid of its good moments. I feel like there's a lot of fun in this movie when they're not in the asylum. I really like snowmobiles and killer mutants.
You like mutants on snowmobiles?
Mutants on snowmobiles. That feels Joe Lynchy to me, right? Mutants on snowmobiles.
Yeah.
It's a stone's throw from Dead Snow. We're almost there. And then there's this movie ends in a way that really disappoints me. And I think it's unfair to be disappointed in a way because of how much I love Jason and Freddy and Chucky.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when they don't kill any of those three mutants. It's when I go, oh, fuck, these guys are never going to die. Right. And part of right. the joy for me is knowing that you've got a party of five on the side of good and a party of three or four on the side of bad. And both sides are going to lose some people.
Oh, man, this is textbook double feature. This is right out
fucking
of,
Dog Soldiers.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Where we talked about this is your formula. You have it's a numbers game and you weed out some over here and you weed out some over here. And yeah, well, especially the moment where they accidentally kill the wrong guy.
Right.
Which is just the worst because
first off,
does anyone believe that that's a mutant? He just put a bag over his head. I mean,
he was ashamed. He was finally ashamed. He was like, the lesbians aren't okay having sex in front of me.
I don't, you know, mutants on snowmobiles is hard for me because we get into this fine line between, with Jason, he can't open doors and then Michael Myers can, you know what sure. I mean? Jason doesn't know how to drive a car. Michael Myers does. And mutant cannibals seem like because they can't speak and they can't, they just seem like they're, the treatment tonally works better in Jason territory where they're stupid machines. And once they, I mean, I'm just wrong about this though, right? Because they start making traps and stuff. So they have to be witty cannibal mutants. They have to know how to operate snowmobiles. Mm-hmm. They're going to chase people around with, you know, giant phallic drills and stuff. Sure. So they have to know how to operate machinery or it doesn't work. The one thing I do really like from this movie is the immediate haphazard accidental death ending of the
right,
film.
Totally.
Where they get away and then their heads just fly off. It's like it was decided in post
sure,
too.
Sure.
They're just driving along and then there's some overdubbing that I don't think sinks to the lips at all of, oh my God, look out, a barbed wire is going to cut our heads. And then the accompanying, I think I made a mistake. I think I took a wrong turn.
Yeah.
rock song is just wonderful.
See,
it's what it
the
is.
The reason that I say I don't like the third one compared to 4 and 5 and 6 and is that 4 and 5 and 6 firmly feel like we've gotten to Children of the Corn 3, where the series goes, I don't fucking know, some fucking mutants, I guess. And I'm immediately transported to being too fucking tired on your couch.
Popcorn.
Angry because I'm sitting there and the movie's disrespecting me.
See, this movie, if it made me think of previous Killapaloozas, it made me think of the ones where we were just, I think there's been a couple of these. I wish I could remember the specific, but the one where we're just a bunch of people are in a mansion restoring an old house or something.
Yeah.
And I know we actually get to restoring an old house later in this franchise, but I can't remember. It was Children of the Corn or...
It could have been Amityville.
Yeah, everybody was just in a house and hanging out there, fucking each other, and then something bad happens. Mm-hmm. It might have been Amityville. I don't remember. Let's get the fuck away from Wrong Turn 4.
So Wrong Turn 5 does something that makes me proud of the series. It makes me go, okay, we've got a Killapalooza on our hands.
Uh-huh.
And that's including Doug Bradley.
Okay.
That's all the this film, honestly, to me, is entirely based on the fact that they stuck Doug Bradley in there and gave the villainy some sort of voice and character. I mean, Doug Bradley comes in there, explains so much of the questions I had about what the fuck is even happening here.
Sure.
And, it also introduces this weird dynamic that the series doesn't drop for the next movie, which is for some reason, the mutants are actually puppets and friends that people don't like that live out in the forest and they come and foil stuff. But the real villains go, stop foiling stuff. I'm being a villain here.
Yeah, well, we need to give a human face to this.
Apparently, we need to personify the mutants
right.
a little bit more.
Yeah.
And what better way to do that than by getting Pinhead back, because Pinhead's not Pinhead anymore anyway.
Sure. You know, a lot of people, this will excite you, a lot of people on these strange dark corners of the web, you have to get like a Tor browser to go to these these fucking message boards. But they believe that this guy, who I think his name is Maynard, they believe he is the Pepto-Bismol guy.
Just a different character?
which is the same character.
I mean, different
as the Pepto-Bismol
actor,
guy,
right?
But he just, I don't know, ages really fucking hard. You know what I mean?
Oh,
between this, which is an
prequel.
Older one.
Okay.
Well, this does that weird right. thing we've seen in some of the other franchises where we start doing prequels, but they become modern day.
Sure.
So we're just supposed to, even though the other ones took place further back in time, in
we're
our
supposed
time,
to
we're supposed to believe
it's all basically the
all
same
just,
ballpark.
Yeah, relative time.
Right.
Something. I don't know how
during
that
during the run of Scrubs. It's just during while Scrubs was on. All right. while Scrubs was on.
Exactly. Exactly. This is also the point where I really feel like the movies start to become increasingly Saw-like.
Yeah.
I was willing to ignore it up to this point, and I think they kind of drop it by the next one. But this was just the pinnacle of stepping into traps and getting pulled apart and just these deaths that don't really make any fucking sense for people to set up. The cannibals are, I don't know, they like to set up these like riddles at this point. These kind of like two of you enter and one has a key in her stomach. Oh, which one is it? I don't know. Kill the other. Just this weird stuff. Barbed wire things that you set off and they, I don't know, it's a lot of barbed wire traps.
Well, that's the thing that becomes kind of weird about the Wrong Turn series is that at first it seemed like the weapons they were using were out of necessity. They're in a shack in the woods. Of course they have fucking rock picks and bow and arrows and some barbed wire. Now they're in a city and I'm supposed to go, oh yeah, you just used that barbed wire you had to tie that person up.
Yeah, well, this is where they have the festival that rivals Lollapalooza, actually. Right. Maybe the first time the namesake festival has appeared within the Killapalooza.
Yep.
I really wish someone would have made it. How good would that have been? Killapalooza joke?
Yeah.
In one of the movies?
Maybe eventually.
But what do they go with? Burning Mountain Man or
Burning
something?
Mountain Goat, yeah.
Burning Man Wrong Turn?
Yeah.
It's basically like the producers coming up with the name of this. What if we call it Burning Man Wrong Turn? No? Wrong Turn Burning Man. No? Still a problem? I think that should add a weird, I don't know, it should add some kind of weird dimension to this, but it doesn't really change much.
It doesn't touch on it at all.
I want it to, it makes it more urban,
I guess, but
right? That's why there's a city.
I just wish at this point, we're at the fifth movie, I wish they would change it up the way Wrong Turn 2 did. Just do something different. Set it in space. Maybe put a time limit on it. What I like is the idea of we've got this music festival and it's kind of, you know, off the grid. Maybe they didn't get all their permits and it takes place out in the middle of the woods. And there's like a cannibal feast because they're trying to kill all these. But here's the thing, Eric, is the franchise.
I have no idea what you just said.
The franchise.
I have no idea what any of those words.
Boiled itself down to being a limitless Appalachian amount of inbred mutants, and now it's just, I don't know, there's like three of them.
Yeah, right.
Remember
right.
the first two movies when you could kill five and went, is that all of them? And the movie went, I mean, if you go downriver, there's like 20 more.
Yeah, there was a distinct point. I don't know really when it was.
I think it's this movie. I think this is the movie where they go, there are three. There are three of them, and Doug Bradley talks to them.
I don't know. I think it happened earlier than this.
Okay.
There was certainly a point where someone had killed four mutants or something and went, well, that's the last of them. I think it was the trauma blanket, actually.
Okay.
We killed the mutants in the house fire and then just sat right in front of their house as if there was no more danger at all and just slept there. We just stayed there the whole, what was that, the third one?
Yep.
Yeah, we went, well, we've killed all the mutants. And actually, the franchise thought so, too. Because then they were like, well, if we're going to keep doing these, we have to do prequels because all the mutants are clearly dead.
Right. That was the last one.
No one would have, if there was a fourth one that immediately followed and they went, no, there's still 30 mutants. No one would be like, no, I was counting.
Right.
There were only three left and you killed them all.
Right.
All right. So let's do this last one.
So the last one is, like I was saying, the last one is the first movie since the third movie to switch hands. It changes directors. And this is a definitive point, like we've seen in the history of all other Killapaloozas, where new hands are going to go, no, I want to do my thing and change the fucking everything about what's going on. But instead, interestingly, possibly commendably.
Let's go with commendably.
Okay.
Just because.
Commendably, this movie goes, nope, we're going to take the movie and set it probably at that same sanitarium. And we're going to keep one tooth, three eyes, and double dentist. All they're sticking around.
Yeah. Look, I tried really hard. I mean, the forums.
Right.
Okay, cut me a little slack. But I need to be honest with everyone. I don't know what the fuck is happening in this movie.
I could have sworn this movie had vampires, and I thought maybe werewolves.
I tried really hard. I mean, I went back, I rewound, I watched it with subtitles. I have no idea what the fuck is happening in this movie.
I thought that maybe there was some other thing. I thought that the sex theater was actually a surgical gynecological theater, and maybe there was something going on there, but it was actually a sex theater. I will give credit to the movie for fucking a girl with a stump. That's progressive.
Oh, man.
I immediately detract from the movie because they don't explain why one fist dentist and double eyes have to wear robes.
One fist. Oh, man. These movies are way funnier than I thought they were going to be.
And I also kind of feel disrespected at the point that the movie goes, oh, he shot a cop. I go, come on, you've been showing that deer. Why would you show the deer if he's going to shoot a cop?
Well, this is kind of interesting, right? It's a, it's like an inverse, I think it's more like an ice truck, but a meat cart. Mm-hmm. You know, we had always talked about meat cart as one of these horror techniques, or really it's used in a lot of different types of movies, but we lie through editing to increase the tension.
Sure.
Because people take for granted that editing happens at a natural pace.
Right.
So, you know, editing can do anything. It's editing. That's, films are not reality. You can just take out a chunk. The camera shows you something and then shows you something else. You assume the two are connected, but fuck you. That's just a random deer. Right. And that's a cop over there. We're not following the same guy. So this kind of does the opposite of the meat cart, which is, you know, an infamous scene. Or we decided it's infamous, I guess. No one else knows what we're talking about, but Double Feature decided it's infamous in Hostel, where somebody's coming to get somebody else, and oh my God, he's opening the door, and our other character is still scrambling to hide, or what's he going to do? And the guy swings the door open, and he's not there. Oh man, what happened? How is that even possible? And here, rather than saving the character at the last moment through editing, they betray the character unnecessarily through editing.
Right.
We go, wow, he shot a cop. How the fuck did that happen? And you go, well, no, that's, there just happened to be two people shooting arrows in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's funny. I don't know.
It is funny.
It's a little bit of a fuck you, I guess, but it's.
And the movie does do a lot to utilize the setting of this giant mansion with hot springs. But
I'm sorry, what, can you just say that again? I think my sensibility cut out.
One thing that this movie attempts to do is it gives you these characters that you're supposed to, well, one, care about, and two, be able to tell the difference between, which,
wow, we're really just not hiding any of it, huh?
There's this kind of subplot where apparently his friends are going to try to rob him,
mm-hmm.
and we're supposed to go, oh no, don't steal those China dolls, that's important. I'm sitting there going, he probably would give them to you. If you just went, yo, these China dolls, can I like have those? He'd be like, sure, just, you know, let me eat you or something.
Yeah, I'm gonna need to see some kind of chart where the characters are identified by how many times they fuck their own sister,
right,
who becomes their mother or something.
Right.
Otherwise, I can't follow what you're saying, Michael. I just have no idea.
I also can't ever be asked to believe that those two people are the caretakers. Also, there is a subplot of this movie that opens up the cult of cannibals. And for mm-hmm. some reason, the two caretakers are the only normal looking ones. And they recruit this guy who is part of the legacy of the cannibal bloodline. I tried really hard to understand what the movie was driving at. Honestly, again, this movie to me felt like it was written before it was Wrong Turn 6. This was a different.
You don't think it started as Wrong Turn 6 kissing cousins? You don't think that's really a word?
I think
the first words committed to paper.
I think this was a cannibal movie. I think this movie saw, We Are What We Are, and went, we can do something kind of similar to that about, you know, accepting one's legacy. And I think it could have been a great film, but the inclusion of the mutants throws such a huge wrench in everything.
Yeah, it does seem like an afterthought. I mean, I hate even speculating about passion projects turning into slasher franchises or selling your, you know, reappropriating a script or whatever, but it does.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be a lot about the movie coming together that, you know, plots that at least make sense on their own and maybe make sense all tied together.
Right.
But certainly stop making sense with the introduction of mutant cannibals.
Right. Well, and it's weird because you'd feel like if the creator of this film really appreciated Wrong Turn as a franchise by at this point, at Wrong Turn 6, they would have done literally anything with those cannibals. But they don't.
Yeah.
They have them kill a cop and then eat a deer and then stand in a room while a stump gets fucked.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You'd think
interrupt some masturbation.
You'd think that at this point the cannibals could start fleshing out as individuals so that I wouldn't be sitting here calling them, you know, Toothface or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, right.
If
well, it's hard to make three characters that can only grunt.
No, it's not.
No.
You fetishize what they do to kill, you appropriate weapons to the individual. You know what I'm saying?
Well, they at least get back trap-wise to doing things like bear traps or whatever, which are hunting-oriented traps.
Right.
It may be surely accidental, but I mean, it's double feature, so let's swing in the
blindly
the area of
intentional
giving more credit.
Sure.
Yeah, right.
Too intentional.
Masterminds.
Right.
Too intentional. I like that. You know, we get away from Saw and we start doing, well, they're hunters and they're woodsy types. And
they're Victor Crowley. Bear
traps.
We got it.
Yeah, right. You know, the only thing I can think about when I watch this movie is all of the sex.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know what to think or say about it, but I feel like we can't end a discussion on Wrong Turn 6 without, I don't know what you say about it. It's incestuous. And it's kind of awkward, and everybody seems to do it.
It's a little hot.
It's a little hot. I mean, that's the idea, is that it's a little, it should be hotter. I think it's suspiciously not hot, actually. You know what I mean? Well, that's the weird tone about the sex in this, is that it's supposed to be taboo hot and a little disgusting. And I think the times that it thinks it's being erotic feel a little grosser than it means to, you know what I mean? There's points when it feels like exploitation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, look, we're going to get these two characters fucking, and then this one's going to masturbate because we're a slasher film and we can, you know, have everybody fuck each other and, you know, really get the teens in here to watch this movie. And you're watching it going, oh, guys, stop doing that. Just don't have a little tact here. Come on. Not while I'm eating. I want to say the inverse also happens, but no, there is no time in the movie where it's trying to be taboo and I masturbate to it instead.
Right.
That's not actually a thing that happens. But damn, is there a lot of sex?
Tons of sex.
I mean, just nudity and characters. I don't really know who they are. And then they're all taking their clothes off. So I know who they are even less. All distinguishing features get fucked out of them. I don't really know what to say about the sex other than there's a ton of it and it's weird. I mean, I wish I could be more insightful than that. I try really hard not to come on the show and just be like, there's two things I don't like to do on here. One is come on here and go, my favorite scene is this one.
Yeah.
I like this scene. And the other thing I fucking hate doing is coming on and being like, yeah, this happens. I don't know what that's about.
Right.
But, I'll just point at the awkward sex and go, look, people are related or are banging. That's weird, huh? And then we'll wrap up our conversation on Wrong Turn 6, I guess. Well, this has been a fun ride through the backwoods with you. Sorry about that really awkward part where my cousins were screwing.
Wasn't Wrong Turn 2 really good, though? Can we at least get an admission
there? Yeah, Wrong
there?
Turn 2 is great. Yeah, and if I could apologize again, or making you watch all the Wrong Turn films just to get two in there. It feels like we did what's right for the show, but not what's right for any living human.
Right.
I'll feel really good when we look at a spreadsheet later of, pull out the numbers document of Double Feature and we go, oh, Killapalooza 25, Wrong Turn. Oh, excellent. There were six of those. That makes sense.
Right.
We have a website where you can blame me for everything, doublefeatureshow.com. Click contact, write a little message. If you want to send us an email, perhaps work on some sort of number crunching project, data mining project, doublefeatureshow@icloud.com. We also have Twitters where you could contact us. We haven't mentioned that in a while. Mine is @_ericx13.
Right. Mine is @plingmichael, PLINGMICHAEL.
And we should thank Liam Duffy, Greg Winner, Seth Hanasek, and basically Die Antwoord the movie, Matthew Barry. I just needed at least one basically Die Antwoord the movie joke on here.
Perfect. Perfect.
If we could go back 7 years and someone could just give me the definition of joke, I think our show would be a lot better. But I'm going to continue to call these things jokes. What are we doing next time?
Next time we are doing Chronicle, and we're going to stick that next to some Even Dwarfs Started Small, because we've just not covered enough Werner Herzog this year.
I'll agree with that. Isn't Chronicle written by, I think it's Max Landis, right? Is it Max Landis?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
John Landis's kid. That should be really interesting to watch. And then also, you know, we're just soliciting Twitter comments from Charles Crawford, which is why you definitely want to watch Even Dwarfs Started Small. And, you know, keep your eyes peeled on the Twitter for, is that a thread? That's not a thread. A thread is what you find on a cannibal message board.
Right.
An exchange of tweets.
Yeah. Okay, whatever. Watch more fucking film.
And bye.